This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way.
36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is
this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson, and today is a busy show as always. Let me tell you what we have on the show. Today, we're going to be speaking with Jessica Kruger, who is a wheelchair rugby athlete, and she had the opportunity to represent Canada at the recent Women's Cup, where she and her team won the bronze medal. Plus, we're going to be discussing some mainstream sports topics, which include the MLB season, as it is up and coming in a couple of days this week, plus a little Toronto Raptors. I'm alongside Josh Watson and Cam Jenkins. Let's get into our headlines for this week.
Neutral Zone Headlines.
We kick things off today with the World Baseball Classic. This year's champion was Japan, after they defeated the United States 3-2. Japan has now won three out of the first five titles in the WBC, and wow, what a World Baseball Classic it was, right down to the last batter and the last hitter, Mike Trout and Ohtani. That was an epic matchup for the ages, and I think that's really going to start to be even a better World Baseball Classic in the years to come.
Another Canadian Blind Hockey Championships is in the books, and we send a big congratulations for Team Canada as they went undefeated in the three-game series against the United States. The scores were as follows: 11-0, 5-4 in overtime, and 6-0 in the third game. With that said, I think the United States will eventually be on par with the Canadian team, so right now we can bask in the glory that is Canada being very good in blind hockey, but I do believe in the coming years it's going to get a lot tighter.
The Canadian Paralympic Committee and CBC Television, CBC Radio, have announced the extension of their partnership to broadcast the next two Paralympic Games in 2024 in Paris, France, and 2026 in Milano Cortina, Italy. I, for one, would love to see more coverage, more representation of the Paralympics on platforms like television. I do think this is a great start, and I look forward to seeing what CBC has planned for us. I do know that they have some great broadcasters in the form of Scott Russell and Devin Haru, who we've both had on this program many, many times now, and look forward to having them again once these events get a little closer.
The Toronto Six wins the Isabel Cup for the first time in franchise history. Congratulations to all the ladies involved, and what an epic game that was as well, going to overtime. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they're going to change that, because I believe it was 3-on-3 for the overtime, and I really feel that it should be 5-on-5. So, going to be interesting to see how that goes in the future.
And I have something hot off the press for all of you today, and that is to tell you that Moose Jaw will host the 2023 Para Ice Hockey World Championships from May the 28th to June 4th. It's always good to see Canada represent on home turf, and we wish them nothing but the best. And of course, we will keep you posted on results as the event progresses and gets closer. Those are your headlines for this week, and I want to chat about something with the two of you that I know that we all love. We all love curling, and we did not put this in the headlines this week because I just figured we would have a chat about it now, and that is the fact that Canada has gone back-to-back in bronze medal victories with the Einarsson team, and she wins the bronze again. However, the ice was brutal that week, and I remember in the either the semifinal or the bronze medal game, she said, quote, "I want you to put the rock somewhere in this area," and just kind of glanced over it with her brush in the back forefoot, because She literally had no idea where this stone was going to be. Josh, I know you watched a lot of it. Comments from you.
Yeah, it was a very interesting event over in Sweden. The venue itself, they only ended up using about a quarter of the space that was available in order to have this this curling event. It is just a massive, massive venue. I don't particularly think it was suitable for this event, personally. I would rather have seen it in a traditional arena. But I'm sure there was a reason that they chose to host it in that particular venue. And I just really hope that the World Curling Federation takes a look at this and says, okay, guys, we can't have one standard device in North America and another standard device in Europe. It's just, it's not appropriate. These are the best curlers in the world. They need the best ice surfaces. And I would say that that is not a high enough quality of ice surface. I mean, it wasn't a temperature problem from what I saw, because they commented all week on how Kerry was just absolutely frozen because of how cold the venue was. So there's got to be something else that occurred there that made it difficult to keep the quality of ice up. And I don't know what that was, but it was awful.
Yeah, it was completely awful. And all the teams ended up having to curl under those conditions as well. But when it's the best curlers in the world, as Josh said, they should have the best ice in the world, because you should be able to predict where your rock is going, especially for skips. Like, at the end of the day, the skips, once they throw draw weight, like, they know their draw weight. And if it's going wide left, wide right, you know, there's absolutely no excuse for that. So hopefully they get that figured out. I think that when it is a big building, they do have to, you know, make it a lot colder there to try to keep the ice the way it should be. But if it gets too old, that can do, you know, crazy things to the ice conditions as well. So, you know, I think Josh's point is right as well, as far as having it in some sort of an arena, like a hockey arena. That's tried, tested, and true. And, you know, they should be able to do that.
Yeah, I really had some trouble with this event. And I want to preface the audience in saying that 99% of the games that we were privy to here in Canada were the Canada games. We did not see much other games aside from updates here and there. And that's it. Having said that, I think that it is a crime to put your best in the world and let them be at their best, allegedly, and make the ice be that much of a conversation. And I know that, you know, you should have conversation about ice, you know, day one, day two, even day three, I would accept it. But when we're having conversations on day 9 and 10 in the championship games about nobody knowing where these rocks are going to finish, that's a real problem. And I think you did a complete disservice to the women's game. And yes, Switzerland was able to figure it out. They now have a record of 35-0 in the last 4 years. They've done great things. And I do hear the argument of everybody plays on the same ice surface, but this goes across the board. And I just think, as Josh pointed out, it's something that we have to take a look at in where and when we have these events, because the best in the world, whether it's Canada or anybody else, should be able to put their craft on display. And I think they were unable to do that at portions of the week.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball.
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at NeutralZoneBR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan from the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at JWatson200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Our guest today is a wheelchair rugby athlete who had the opportunity to represent Canada in the Women's Cup, where she and her team took home a bronze medal. Who am I talking about? That's Jessica Kruger from Vancouver, British Columbia. She's here to talk about her life and sports career. Jessica, welcome to the program. Nice to have you along with us.
Hi, Brock. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Jessica, I thought we'd start off, if you could maybe tell us a little bit about your story. As I understand, you were in a bit of a freak accident.
Yeah, so when I was 15, I was working for a house painting company, and second week on the job, up two stories at the top of a ladder, and I fainted and fell that two stories and broke my neck and ended up with a spinal cord injury that left me a quadriplegic.
We're curious, what point in your journey did parasports become important to you and part of really who you are?
Yeah, so before I had my accident, I was super athletic, very involved in lots of sports. So it was definitely something that I was looking to fill immediately after I had the accident. And while I was going through rehab, I was introduced to a bunch of different wheelchair sports, and wheelchair rugby was kind of the one that stuck, that I fell in love with. And yeah, it was really like the first year after my accident that I started playing and coming out to practices and sort of getting a taste for it.
And as I understand, one time in your career, you were the only female athlete on your rugby team. What was that like, being kind of a trailblazer for you?
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky in that when I started the sport, there was another girl that was playing. So it kind of helped to introduce me to the sport. I was the only female at one point and also the youngest. I was 15 playing with mostly 30, 40-year-old guys. So definitely lots of things sort of making it a little bit more intimidating for me. But honestly, the community is just so strong and so supportive and so encouraging that I was barely aware of the fact that I was the only girl out there at one point in time.
Oh, that's awesome. You recently competed at the Women's Cup, as Brock mentioned in the opening. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, for sure. So this is the first time that Canada has sent a women's team to an event, and just such a huge honor to be playing it for Canada, and so incredible to be playing with other women. There just hasn't been enough women in the sport to be able to do this until this point. So it's really exciting to see how the sport is growing and how more and more women are getting involved. And yeah, we're getting these opportunities that we've never seen before. It's very exciting and a huge honor for me.
We're joined by Jessica Kruger, who is a female wheelchair rugby athlete. And you're listening to The Neutral Zone here on AMI. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Cam Jenkins and Joshua Watson.
So, Jess, as you alluded to, this is the first time Canada has sent a women's wheelchair rugby to an event. Can maybe talk about this decision of being able to do that and how it will affect not only wheelchair rugby, but para and women's teams in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think a huge part of the reason that it's taken this long to send a women's team is because there just hasn't been enough athletes to choose from and to sort of build a team. So really exciting in terms of the fact that it means that now the sport's progressing where more and more women are hearing about it and feeling like there's a space for them on that team. It's not too intimidating for them. And yeah, just very exciting in terms of what that could mean for wheelchair rugby. Is it going to be something that ends up being represented at the Paralympics one day as a women's event as well? I mean, I think that's kind of what we're all hoping we might one day see. So yeah, very exciting to see the steps that are being taken, and we'll find out where we end up soon, I guess.
Now, stepping away from the sports arena a little bit here just for a while, you do also have a business called The Stubborn Baker. I'm wondering if you can chat with us a little bit about that and why you chose to call yourself The Stubborn Baker.
For sure. Yeah, so The Stubborn Baker is a custom dessert business. I do like special occasion wedding cakes, cookies, cupcakes, all the treats. And the name came from the fact that, surprise, surprise, I am very stubborn. And that is sort of the trait that I've leaned on as I've faced some adversity being a person with a disability starting a small business. So just from the very beginning, when I decided I wanted to go to pastry school, I was told no by two schools. One, they didn't want to accommodate somebody in a wheelchair. And the second one said I could pay for two spots because I'd take up double the room. So yeah, definitely facing some challenges right from the get-go there, and really leaning on that stubbornness, resilience, whatever you want to call it. I feel more comfortable saying stubborn, and just, you know, continuing to look for a place that was willing to accommodate me. And luckily I found that in VCC and was able to sort of get my start.
So with the university or college that accepted you, what was it about them that you ended up going there, or how were they able to accommodate you for you to feel comfortable to go there?
Mm-hmm. So Vancouver Community College is where I ended up, and they have a disability services coordinator that I went in and met with. And at that point, I'd already been rejected by two people. So, you know, I was going in there with low expectations. And fortunately, he, when I said, like, I think I can make this work, he just said, okay, we've never done this before. No one in a chair has ever completed the program, but you tell us what you need and we're going to make it happen so you can do it. So yeah, it was definitely a very pleasant surprise to be sort of feel like I was finally welcomed into that program. And the only adaptation that they ended up doing was making me an adjustable height workstation. Everything else I was able to sort of work with what was there. So pretty minimal ask, but they made it happen for me.
You definitely didn't have take up two spots to be able to. That's unbelievable. Yeah. That they would do that.
No.
People are crazy. In your bios, there's certainly a common theme, and you talk a lot about the support of your husband. Mm. So we wanted to ask a little bit about him and why he's been so important to you in your journey so far.
For sure. Yeah. So husband is kind of a new term. We just got married this last summer, but we've been together for 6 years. And since I started my business, while I was going through school and facing challenges there, he's kind of been like one of the main people that's just been supporting me, encouraging me. You know, there's been some days where I've questioned my life choices, and he's been the one to help me, you know, see what I'm doing and why I'm working so hard and why we push past the people that maybe doubt us and whatnot. So, you know, he's the one that might show up at 1 a.m. to help me package things because I'm losing my mind, and shows up at the farmers markets with me and helps me get my tent and whatnot sorted. So I couldn't do what I'm doing right now without his support. So I'm really so grateful to him. And
what I'm kind of wondering, because you love to bake, not only what do you enjoy baking or what do you enjoy like to eat, but maybe you could make some the Neutral Zone cupcakes and mail those out to us.
Well, I don't know how well cupcakes mail, but
okay, fair enough. Cookies, maybe, well, we'll take cookies delivery. Cookies as well, if they'll mail out from BC.
Oh yeah, okay. Cookies I could probably work with. I've heard your request.
We do seem to have a sweet tooth, and I mean, personally, I'm curious to see how that Starry Night cake is going to turn out.
Oh, awesome. You're following along with me on Instagram, hey?
I am.
So I want to go back to, you know, the fact that you won a bronze medal. Obviously, when we go into events as Canadians, we go in and we look and we say we want to be on the top step of the podium. Now that you've had some time to step back and recognize the accomplishment, are you satisfied with this accomplishment with your team?
Yeah, I definitely am really proud of what we ended up doing. We didn't really know what to expect going into this tournament because we've never played together as a team before. We had one tournament where we got to play with most of the lines that we ran in Paris, but literally all of us are from all over Canada. We're normally competing against one another. We're not playing together. So to come in off of having had one weekend essentially to practice as a team and perform in the way that we did, I think we saw huge growth throughout the weekend in Paris that we were all really proud of. And yeah, to be able to podium in any way, bring home a bronze medal for Canada definitely feels good. And now we have a better sense of where we sort of stand amongst the other teams and what we need to work on for next time to hopefully bring home a gold.
And what's next for Jess as far as training and routine? Like, baking and training to me doesn't really go together. I don't really have the willpower to not eat. But what's the training like, or kind of what are the next steps for you moving forward as far as being an athlete in rugby?
Yeah. So, I mean, the great part about being my own boss is I get to build my own schedule. So we've got Vancouver Invitational coming up next weekend here. So that's our next big rugby tournament. And I'll be playing as part of the BC provincial team. So not on my women's team this time around, but, you know, still playing wheelchair rugby and hoping we'll be able to pull out a first or second place there this weekend. And then after that, we're going to be heading to New Brunswick for national championships. So yeah, we're doing our practices usually twice a week leading up to that. And then hopefully we're going to pull out some medals at those two competitions as well.
If you were to step back and there's a, let's say there's a young female listening to this interview, what would you tell that young person in order why they should get involved in para sports, but wheelchair rugby as a whole?
I mean, honestly, wheelchair rugby changed my life. It was the thing that made me feel like being a person with a disability could have the same sort of meaning and the same sort of independence that I had as an able-bodied teenage girl. So definitely a strong supporter of anybody getting involved in any wheelchair sport. If wheelchair rugby feels scary, I would just urge you to give it a try. I think once you get in that chair and you smash someone, it's pretty hard to go back from that. Even if you feel a little bit timid, I feel like anyone can get a taste for it. So yeah, just I would really encourage anyone that's even remotely interested to get out there and give it a try, because I'm pretty sure the sport's going to speak for itself. The community is going to speak for itself, and you're going to fall in love with it like I did.
Just the fact that you said get in a chair and smash someone makes me want to get in a chair and try it myself, to be honest with you.
Personally, I'm scared of Jess now. I don't want to get smashed.
That's fair. Jess, thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. We greatly appreciate it. And best of luck next weekend and beyond.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been a pleasure.
That was Jessica Kruger talking to us about her wheelchair rugby career and stubborn baking career as well. If you like what you heard and want to leave us a voicemail, here's how you can go ahead and do that.
Hey, if you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now. 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail!
I always find that there's things in each interview that you can step back and you can realize, oh, that was a lasting impression. And I think it happened towards the end of the interview for me, and it was get in a chair and smash someone that was the lasting impression in the Jessica interview. I really appreciate the honesty of people, and it's lovely, because all truth be told, if you step back and you listen or watch wheelchair rugby, it really does sound like there is more smashing than anything else. So
they don't call it murder ball for nothing.
No kidding. Yeah, we really appreciate Jessica's time, and best of luck in her baking career as well. Cameron, you really tried to get us some baked goods here on the Neutral Zone.
Oh,
which
I wanted some baked goods so bad. I'm so hungry right now, and I realize I'm not going to get those cookies for a week. And we didn't give her our address either, so I don't know how she's going to get it to us. Oh, but anyways.
Hey, you're the social...
Oh, well, maybe even if she... Well, I'm the social media guy. Yeah, maybe I'll reach out to her and give
in case
us
you need
each
it.
Of our addresses and Neutral Zone cookies and ship it to us. You know what? Even if she did a cookie with the, you know, with the red and then the white with the Neutral Zone on it and took a picture of it, I'd settle for that.
There you go.
You can't eat the picture, though. This is the problem.
No, I know, but... That's okay. I'll go get a piece of red velvet cake from the local grocery store and have to be happy with that. But I'm sure she bakes phenomenal stuff, and I'm just so hungry right now.
Another one of my favorite remarks from that interview was Cameron, who said, baking and athletics don't go together, because that's literally what I was thinking. And Cameron was the one that said it.
They don't go together for us, gentlemen. It's fine to bake as long as you don't eat your product.
Oh, man. Well, she has to taste test it for to make sure it's okay.
Yeah, well, that's what the husband's probably for.
It must be so hard, because I'm sure it's so good. And how does she have the willpower? I was about to say, how does she have the wheelchair? She has that. How do you have the willpower to not eat your own baking and not mess up being a high performance athlete?
That's a good question.
Obviously, I can't do it. I was just in the community league because I ate way too many cookies in the day.
See, this be the thing. I don't have any willpower. And if any of you can see me on camera, you know that I don't have any willpower when it comes to baked goods. The blessing is that I can't bake, so I'm relying on others to bake. But I have many people in my life that will bake. So once again, I appreciate Jessica's time and best of luck and everything that she hopes to endeavor. And it was a pleasure having her on the program. Well, I thought we would try to divide this segment into two, and I use the word try because even though I try, I often fail to divide these segments into two. So let's just see how this goes. Let's start with the MLB regular season, as we are only a few days away from the beginning of the season. What is your hopes and desires for the league as a whole this year, if we just look at it as a big picture, Cameron?
As a big picture, I think it's going to be really interesting at the beginning of the year with the rule changes to see how teams play. There's going to be no more shift and the pitch clock as well. I think that's going to be really interesting to see how the pitch clock works. So those are the two things that I'm really excited to see and how that's going to work out and how much that's going to kind of mess with teams and how they're going to have to adjust. And was spring training enough with the pitch clocks to be able to get used to it in time for the regular season? So, yeah, because there's a lot of teams that are really good out there. But one thing can kind of knock you off your pedestal. And I'm not sure if that's going to be one of the things that's going to knock certain teams off their pedestal to, you know, until they get used to it. So, yeah, those are the two things that I'm really looking forward to this year.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be similar. It's going to be along those lines, but it's going to be how well are we going to enforce those new rules? Because it's fine in a spring training game to say, oh, you took more than 20 seconds, ball one. But if it's the seventh game of the World Series and there's two outs and two strikes, are you really going to call a ball four and possibly walk in a winning run on a pitch clock violation? That whole wording about umpire's discretion makes me a little nervous. I think rules are best enforced when they're black and white. And so that will be the interesting thing for me, is to see, okay, how strict are we going to be with this? But overall, for the season, I'd just like to see competitive races in all the divisions. Like, I want to see the NL East come down to the last weekend of the season, the AL East. Want to see our Blue Jays on top, of course, but it would be fun if there's meaningful baseball in September. The NL West tends to be a one or a two team division, so let's see if some of the others can make it more of a race. That for me is what's interesting, is when things are unknown until the end.
Right.
Yeah, I think that with the wild card games that they have, that's kind of added it a little bit more competitive to it, as far as you know, getting into September, October, and teams still being into it. So, but that's a great point, Josh. Be interesting to see how deep it goes as far as the races, and if they're over a couple months before it's all said and done, or if it's going to be, you know, a week, last week of the season.
You know, funny to your point, Josh, about the enforcing of the rules. It's hard to enforce something when the officials are new on this as well. Everyone's going in to this completely new. Yes, we've used umpteen amount of spring training games to implement these rules. That's all well and good. But when the lights are on and they become bright and all of that, it does get tougher. And I did ask this on one of my recent hits, and somebody responded to me and said, yeah, but that is what they're going to do, is they're going to walk in the winning run if it goes past the 15, 20 seconds, depending on runners on base or not. I have a hard time swallowing that as a pill. It's tough. I understand that it's the letter of the law, but it really is a tough pill for me to swallow and say the winning run could potentially be walked in because some guy is a millisecond off of the pitch clock. Like, I just, like, we might as well end the World Series in a home run derby then, if that's the way we're going to be. You know, I don't know. That might be a bit overzealous on this, but I don't know. It is something that scares me.
I was just going to mention about curling, and they never used to have a clock before, and then they had a clock. And there's been times where time has run out and they haven't been allowed to throw any more rocks. I think that because it's a new rule, yes, people will be up in arms once a umpire calls it to the letter of the law. But after a few years, everyone's going to get used to it, just like they did the time clock with the curling. They got used to it as well. And some of the old people that still remember when there weren't clocks and curling, they still might say, but it's good. And it's great for television. It kind of shortens the game up a little bit in curling, and it's going to do the exact same for baseball. So you're not there for 3 or 4 hours. You're going to be there for 2 to 3 hours. So they'll get used to it. But yes, people are going to complain, but in a few years, nobody's going to remember.
Yeah, that is going to be the interesting thing for me, because I agree with you that it should be simple. Okay, the clock is at 0, you didn't throw your pitch, or the clock is at 8 and you're not looking at the pitcher. It should be that simple. But it's one thing to end a spring training game like that, which we've seen. It's completely another thing, and there will be a completely different uproar if the last game of the World Series is decided because somebody wasn't looking at a pitcher or somebody didn't throw a pitch. That's all I'm saying. You have the owners of the New York Yankees or Texas Rangers or whomever losing the World Series because somebody didn't throw their pitch on time. I don't know how that's going to be stomached.
Guaranteed they're going to be upset, or they're going to complain, especially if it's the, you know, big bad Yankees. But at the end of the day, if you're all the way to the World Series, you've played 162 games with that pitch clock. And I'm not good in math, but how many games is it in the playoffs to make it to the World Series?
7 per round.
If you're using that, if you're using that as an excuse as to it's not fair because we lost the World Series, I just say that's a bunch of you-know-what at the end of the day.
Baloney?
Because you've had 162, baloney, yeah, we'll use baloney. Anything but baking, I don't want to talk about any baking products, but yeah, baloney we'll go with. So, but yeah. 162 games plus all the playoff games. If the big bad Yankees want to cry because they didn't get one pitch off and they lost the game because of it, too bad. Sucks to be them.
Fair enough. There's one thing I want to get in here before we finish on the side of the Toronto Blue Jays, and that is if you follow Cam Jenkins at Neutral Zone Cam J, you will notice that he has been doing something for the last month, let's say. And every time he gets an opportunity, he takes his shot. And this is about Yusei Kikuchi, because he knows that I'm not a fan of Yusei Kikuchi whatsoever. And every time he has a good spring training start, it's like, oh, he went 7 innings and threw 7 strikes. Well, I'll be damned if that's good, you know? And that's usually my response. So if you want to see some amusing back and forth with Cam Jenkins and I, follow us on Twitter. And if you don't know our Twitter handles, it's at Neutral Zone Cam J and at Neutral Zone BR, and JWatson200 is where you can get us. But man, you are driving me insane with these tweets. And I have to say this in a public forum. Good for you, Yusei Kikuchi. Do it when it matters, because I don't believe it. And I won't believe it until mid to three quarters of the way through the season, because the wheels will eventually fall off the track.
You mean you don't want him to pitch against minor league pitching?
He's my boy. Kikuchi's my boy this year, man. He's going to be the dark horse, and he is going to end up pitching fairly well. He's going to be able to pitch deeper into games.
God,
he's might not you know, may have a 500 record, but he's going to be able to pitch a lot of innings and do well. And then you're going to be eating those words.
Yeah.
I guarantee.
I hope you're right.
What are you going to put on?
Hope you're right.
What are you going to put on this alleged guarantee? Because I'm not believing this guarantee. Put something on this podcast right now, what you're going to guarantee and what you're going to do if he doesn't do it. Is there a dinner, baked goods, something on the line here?
Yeah, I can bake you something for sure. If I'm wrong, I'll bake you something. And if you're wrong, you have to bake me something. Hashtag, what can we come up here with?
I'm going to ask you guys two questions here, and one's on one side, one's on the other. And I want you to fill out the blanks here, starting with Josh on the first one. The season would be a success for the Toronto Blue Jays if blank. How do you fill in the blank?
The season will be a success for the Toronto Blue Jays if they get past the play-in game. After what happened last year when we were supposedly seeing the movie instead of the trailer, and now they don't want to say anything at all, I just want to see them make it to a 7-game series, quite frankly.
For me, they took away the home run jacket. They seem to be a lot more serious or a lot more professional this year. And to me, it's World Series or bust.
Oh, wow.
They've got to make it to the World Series.
Okay, so let's do the reverse. The season would be a failure if blank, Cameron.
Well, if they don't make the playoffs at all, that would be disaster, considering the expectations that they have on them and what they did last year, and with the defensive-minded people that they got in the offseason to be better in the outfield as far as defensively. If they don't make the playoffs at all, that's utter disaster.
Well, we agree on this one, Cam. I'm right there with you. If they don't make the playoffs, I don't know what's going to happen. I think you're going to see Schneider gone. I think you're going to see Mattingly take over. And I think you're going to see players traded, because it will be a sign that this has not worked.
Hold on. Can't move on that one. Are you saying then that if they don't make the playoffs, that 3-year deal that John Schneider just signed in the offseason is going to mean nothing because they're going to move on from him if they don't make the playoffs, Josh?
I don't see how they can. I don't see how they can keep him. He was supposed to be the replacement for the previous manager, whose name, of course, has just completely eliminated itself from my brain.
Charlie Montoyo.
Thank you.
Cameron's favorite.
My favorite manager in the whole wide world.
For some reason, I was going to say Carlos Tosca, which is like 20 years ago. But anyway.
Well, that works.
John Schneider is supposed to be the one who can talk to them and who can get them to be more professional and can do this and can do that. Well, if they don't make the playoffs, or if they don't get any further than they did last year, how do you keep them? You've potentially got the next bench boss right there on the bench as his right-hand man.
Yeah, but kind of what I'm
this
thinking,
this team is supposed to
you.
Win the World Series.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with you, John Schneider. Maybe he will be gone. But both the Schneider and Montoyo, they're just puppets for Atkins to play with and just to do what they want him to do. And same with John Schneider now. So wouldn't surprise me if they got somebody else that's just a mouthpiece. But I really start to wonder, okay, is Atkins going to be gone? Is Shapiro going to be gone if they don't make the playoffs? And that'd be really interesting to see.
There should be
some real interesting stuff thrown around about the Toronto Blue Jays. Puppets and paper, basically all that the contract is worth, according to Josh Watson. So interesting to see what the season will be or won't be this year, but it gets going at 4:10 p.m. Eastern at the St. Louis Cardinals against the Blue Jays, and we have 162 games to dissect this Toronto Blue Jays team and tell you what's good and bad, and maybe Cameron will get another hate on for another Charlie Montoyo-esque like this year. Because he doesn't have Charlie Munger.
No, it's all positive, and it's all about Kikuchi this year for me. So nothing but positive, and it's going to be all about Kikuchi. But I just wanted to say one other thing before we hopped on air here, that I saw that they're having a hot dog at the Rogers Center that is a poutine hot dog. That's like $9.99.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my, I thought they only did that stuff at the exhibition, not at the dome. My gosh.
Anything to fill the seats.
Here I go talking about food again. But how can you
put poutine on a theme today, don't we?
Dog, man?
And I think maybe we all ought to agree to eat before the show next time.
And if I go to the, I probably will have one of those things, but I would
sure, you got to try it.
Well, I don't think I'll be leaving the dome unless it's in a casket if I have one of those things. So
be interesting. Oh,
oh, the visuals. Oh, the visuals that just appeared. I would try.
Clog the arteries.
I would try it. I did see it. And honestly, by the look of it, for those of you that may not have seen this, but it's cheese curds, gravy. I think I even saw a French fry lingering around somewhere in there. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look good, it doesn't look good, but it certainly sounds like it might be appealing, not so much for the artery, but for the stomach, it would be good.
It looks like a knife and fork meal. You're not going to pick this thing up and eat it.
Yeah, well.
Sorry to get sidetracked. I just had to mention about that poutine hot dog.
No,
it was on my mind, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, you never do know what we might talk about here on the Neutral Zone. And I got to tell you that sometimes I should eat a hot dog with a knife and fork without poutine on it because it's just a disaster, even with just ketchup on it, let alone adding poutine. But yeah, nonetheless, I would be.
Yeah,
I would
too.
Be trying that. I do wonder if that would classify as one of those dollar hot dogs or $2 hot dogs at the ballpark on whatever day of the week they do that on.
Ew.
But I doubt it because Rogers has got to make their money.
No, $9.99 because, you know, marketing, you can't have it at 10 because people go $10. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to get that. That's too expensive. But if it's $9.99, no problem. That's not expensive at all. I'll buy that.
Right.
Yep. There's a whole science behind that, unfortunately, which we don't have time for, I don't think.
Right, and we're not a marketing show, so not going to go down the minutia of that.
That's good.
Let's talk about something else that has been really, truly inconsistent. The Toronto Raptors are in the mix for the play-in tournament, and if anyone can tell me how the play-in tournament works, that would be great, because you need a real abacus to figure out who plays who and where and carry the one over here, over there. But what say you guys? Are you satisfied with the Toronto Raptors being in the play-in? Yes? No? What are we saying? Josh?
Satisfied? Satisfied with the Toronto Raptors? Are we telling jokes now? This has been a disaster of a season. Absolutely awful, awful season. I don't even know where to begin with this team. They're so consistently inconsistent. That's the only way I can put it. They play up to the best teams in the league. They play down to the worst teams in the league. It's to a point where I don't remember the last game I watched because I got so frustrated. It's a consistent effort. That's all I ask for. Just put in a good effort week, day in, day out. That is your job. That is what you're supposed to do. And I mean, we watched them go through the regular season. We got to the trade deadline. We talked about, well, maybe they'll sell off. No, we added, because why would we not sell off and prepare for next season? No, that would make too much sense. No, we decided to bring back Jakob Poeltl, which I'm not saying that's a bad move. He's done well for us. He's helped out. But it's just like, do we really want to get into this quagmire that is the play-in tournament? I don't think so. If you sat Masai Ujiri down at the beginning of the season and Bobby Webster and said, where is this team going to be? I don't think they'd say, oh, we're going to be happy to be in the play-in tournament. No. So, guys, let's figure it out. We've wasted a year of Scotty Barnes. We've potentially wasted the last year of Fred Van Vliet, depending on what he decides to do. Gary Trent Jr.
He's gone.
Gary Trent Jr. is hot one day and he's ice cold the next. Like, I don't know what to do. And maybe it's because I'm not enough of a basketball fan. I'll have to defer to one of you or to Claire on that, but I'm completely turned off by this team this year.
I think at the end of the day, they should have traded at the trade deadline. Van Vliet, he's going to be gone, in my opinion. They're going to get nothing for him. I'm sure they could have got something useful for Fred Van Vliet at the trade deadline. Anobi.
At least some picks.
Yeah, exactly. And Anobi,
seems disgruntled.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on who you talk to, he doesn't want to be here or he does want to be here. And somebody offered 3 first-round picks for him. But is it MLSE? Supposedly. Is it the board saying, no, we want some playoff dates? Even if it's one playoff date, because then they make a bit more money. Is it the owners going with this? Or is it Ujiri saying, okay, I want to give these guys one last chance, and then I'm going to do the deconstruction in the offseason before the draft. And maybe he'll be able to, you know, wheel and deal at the draft and get some good first-round draft picks at the draft and do the famous quote-unquote retool. And maybe the Raptors will be good next year if they do some retooling before the draft. So maybe Ujiri's trying to do something like that. Like, Ujiri keeps it so tight to the vest, and so does Webster, that it's really hard to know what they're thinking or what they're going to do. So I really hope that they get the business before the draft, they make some trades, and we're able to turn it around next year.
The truth of the matter is, even if they are to win through this play-in tournament, they're going to end up playing Philadelphia or Milwaukee in the first round, no matter how this shakes out. The best they can do is finish 7th or 8th, which in my mind means a 2-game home series, that's all you get, because either of those teams are going to come in there and they're going to sweep you like you weren't even there. And so is the $1 million in revenue between the 2 games, is that worth it to the organization? I'd like to think not. I'd like to think that the championship was what was more worth it. Maybe I'm a naive fan broadcaster, but to me, I want to see us be competitive. And I think the Toronto Raptors failed miserably this year, not getting into the top 6 and getting into this playoff play-in series. I just think it's a fail altogether, and I do not like the narrative of, oh, we need more playoff exposure. The only person on this team that needs more playoff exposure is Scotty Barnes. Other than that, there's nothing to it. Everybody else has had playoff experience. OG's been around. Yes, he was injured for the playoffs. You know, Gary Trent Jr. was around in playoff time. All that's all well and good. The only person that we're looking at and saying needs playoff experience is Scotty Barnes, and I'm not sure the play-in is the experience that we need from him. Very quick thoughts from both of you on this, starting with Cam.
Yeah, I think getting Scotty Barnes some experience would be nice, but do you want to have it where it could be a one-and-done game and the play-in experience? So I don't think that's going to give him a lot of experience. The only way to do this is to, I don't want to say blow apart the team, but definitely some of your big stars, quote-unquote stars, and I use that term loosely, you're going to have to trade them, and then it's, do you want draft picks for those people, or do you want some other, useful players that are 25 and under, or around the age of 25? That's the decision that, to me, the Raptors have to make.
Yeah, there's enough veterans on this team that can guide Scotty through a playoff series, in my opinion. They don't need to get into a play-in tournament just so Scotty can find out what it's like to be in the playoffs. He, as far as I remember from his college days, did play in the NCAA March Madness tournament. He knows what it's like to be in big games. The NCAA March Madness is the college version of the NBA Finals. If he can handle March Madness, he can handle the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this has been a complete and utter fail for the Toronto Raptors this year. I think if I'm Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, I think they had their opportunity to get into the, you know, the sixth seed and maybe make a run at this, but they didn't. And now we're into this web that is the play-in tournament. And I don't think it's going to mean much. Like I said, even if they are to play in an actual seven-game series, it's a four-game sweep, and that's it. And I would put my money where my mouth is, and I will do something if they win a game in the playoffs that's in a whole round. That's it. Other than that, if they get nothing but swept, that's exactly what they are and what I expected them to do. I think that, you know, we need to take a hard look at what management did this year. They didn't do enough at the trade deadline in getting rid of people, and I think it was epic fail on their part. I just want to preview what's coming up next week. We're going to be delving into my experience at the Canadian Paralympic Committee Summit. I sat down with 14 athletes. We're going to start with Zach Medel next week. So stay tuned for that. And over the next number of months, we're going to roll out some of those. It was fun, and I cannot wait to share more with you in regards to that. That is the end of our show for this week. I would like to thank Josh Watson, Cam Jenkins. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Mark Aflalo. Plus, Ryan Delahanty is our podcast coordinator. Tune in next week because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Be safe. Be well.